Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. It's Thursday, which means it is Author of the Week time, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. And we've got author Calvin Beissner, PhD, president of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. And his book is Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism. Welcome to the show, and tell us about the book. What is The Case for Realism in the context of climate and energy?
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism is a collection of 16 chapters by 16 different authors, a bunch of climate scientists, 9 climate scientists, a couple of environmental and energy economists. We've got ethics professors. We've got philosophers. It's quite an amazing book. And what it does is it gives the scientific case that while climate change is real and human activity does contribute to it, it is not disastrous. It is not an existential threat. And as a matter of fact, it's very likely that the benefits of the kind of warming that we truly, realistically can expect would outweigh the harms. And certainly the benefits of all the energy that we get from the coal, oil, and natural gas that get blamed for climate change outweigh the harms. We know that from as simple a thing as that over the last 100 years, the average number of human deaths caused by extreme weather events has plummeted by over 99%. What that means is that the wealth that we get by using abundant, affordable energy, reliable energy from coal, oil, and natural gas enables us to protect ourselves from whatever is happening with climate. So one of the key messages of this book is that poverty is a much greater threat to human well-being than anything related to climate. And since abundant, affordable, reliable energy is absolutely indispensable to lifting and keeping whole societies out of poverty, it is suicidal for us to demand a transition from abundant, affordable, reliable coal, oil, and natural gas to diffuse, expensive, and unreliable wind, solar, and other so-called renewable energy sources. So our aim is to provide the kinds of solidly, scientifically and economically and statistically verifiable facts for policymakers to make good decisions and for the public to understand this so that they can communicate their desires to their elected representatives.
Most of the narrative, if you will, that we hear regarding climate change and renewable energy, and it seems to be taught somewhat uniformly in schools and pop culture, is that there is a consensus, all scientists agree, that there is climate change that is due to man, and that we should do something to stop climate cycles, the climate from changing. Otherwise, yeah, as a planet, we will be doomed. And the answer to that is electric vehicles, solar panels, wind farms. So are you saying that there's some folks in the scientific community that don't necessarily agree with that assessment? Because that's just not what we've been told.
Right. That's not what the mainstream media tell us. It's not what politicians tell us. And it's not what environmental activists tell us. But here's a dirty little secret. The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which all of these folks who claim consensus always point to, it itself tells us in its 2018 assessment report on climate change of 1.8 degrees, okay, it tells us in that report that if we were to do nothing to reduce global warming from now to the end of the century, mankind would, on average, be only about 8.9 times wealthier than we are today, instead of about 9 times wealthier. In other words, even with the worst scenario of global warming, we're much better off than we are today. So the IPCC, this is supposedly the authority on this stuff, tells us that this is not by any means an existential threat. It is not even a significant negative for us. The benefits of the activities that contribute to warming so far outweigh the risks that at the end of the century, we will be at least eight and a half, 9 times better off than we are today.
We are talking with our author of the week, Calvin Beissner. The book is Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. I find, as somebody that is much more of a casual observer than someone like you who is an expert in this area, that some of the solutions that get pushed are oftentimes, they just seem almost counterproductive. Are there certain activities or products that you find are considered to be really great for the environment, and in fact, not only are not helpful to the environment, but do damage to the environment?
Yes, absolutely. First off, it takes far more mining of earth materials to produce wind turbines, solar panels, and batteries, gigantic batteries and millions of them, than it does to mine coal, oil, and natural gas to provide the same amount of energy. In other words, you have to move a whole lot more earth, and you have to do a whole lot more processing of the minerals that you've moved, resulting in serious toxic waste runoff from those processing procedures for so-called renewable energy sources than you do for conventional so-called fossil fuel sources. Now, what also bothers me, because early in my life, I lived in India for a while, where I observed poverty on a scale that we in the U.S. just don't see. I stepped over the bodies of people who had died overnight of starvation and disease, is the impact of the world's poor, on the world's poor, of these sorts of policies. They will slow, stop, or reverse the conquest of poverty. And that will result in far higher mortality rates, far higher death rates in the developing world. And they also hurt the poor even in developed countries. By pushing up energy prices, they make it harder for people to afford food, clothing, shelter, and everything else. So, you know, as a Christian ethicist, a professor of ethics, I just find this kind of thing morally unconscionable.
A lot of folks, I find, they won't even necessarily engage in conversation when it comes to the truth about the environment and climate, because they will be faced with, you know, numbers and information that, you know, well, 100 and so many scientists all agree this, and there will be thrown at them, will be thrown what they're told are facts, and they don't know who these scientists are. They don't know. It looks like some sort of official chart. And so they feel as if they aren't equipped to understand the complexities of the issue. What do you say to those folks?
Well, first off, a lot of the science can be extremely technical, but someone who understands it well can explain it well on a lay level. And that's what we have in all of the chapters of this book. We wrote this book intentionally to make it such that non-scientists can comprehend it. Second, the notion of consensus as somehow holding authority in science is the absolute antithesis of science. Consensus is not science, and science is not consensus. Science is dependence on observations of the real world around us. The late Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman famously said that the key to science is that when we try to figure out how something works in the natural world, first we make a guess, then we make predictions based on if that guess is true, then we make real-world observations, and if the observations contradict the predictions, the guess is wrong, and it doesn't matter how smart you are or how beautiful your guess is or anything else, you're wrong, right? Well, the computer climate models are that are the only source of the notion of dangerous man-made global warming have been consistently wrong. Consistently, they project 2 to 3 times, even 4 times as much warming as actually observed over the relevant period. That means they provide no rational basis for any predictions about global average temperature, and therefore no rational basis for any policy about global warming and energy or anything else. Consensus is not science, and observation is, and that's what supports the realist position, which climate change is real, human activity contributes, it's not a disaster, and furthering our economic development protects us from whatever happens in climate.
Final question for our author of the week, Calvin Beissner. If a person is once again just casually observing what debate there is on this, it is easy to walk away with the conclusion that there is, as you said, a consensus, whether it's scientific or not. And then there's just a few rogue individuals that are a little bit wacky, like yourself, that come up with these sort of alternative perspectives on science. And I know just because of research that I've done what oftentimes leads to the politicization of science, particularly when it comes to so much that is pushed in politics. And I'm wondering how corrupt, I suppose, if you will, when it comes to this subject matter, is the scientific community? Is it as lopsided as it seems, or is there an extreme overrepresentation of those who claim that we are all doomed because of man and we have to somehow stop the climate from changing? Where are we on that scale?
Well, ClimateGate, the release in 2009 and 2011 of thousands and thousands of emails back and forth among the various climate scientists who really have pressed the alarmist notion, revealed to us very, very clearly that there was a very self-conscious effort to control all of the peer-reviewed publications in the world that deal with climate change, and to ban skeptics, critics of that kind of a notion from those periodicals. There's intimidation of people. There is fabrication of data, corruption of data. There was the intimidation of editors, and even actually getting one editor fired for having the courage to print a very fine article that questioned the catastrophist notion. So there is a lot of corruption. But frankly, even though I don't agree with it on everything, I think that the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change actually presents a pretty realistic picture in its massive assessment reports. Sadly, what's in those isn't what typically gets to the public. We get press releases and statements from UN officials like, this is code red for humanity. You won't get the support for that in the massive scientific reports. And so the notion that there is such a consensus is largely pushed by people who believe in catastrophic climate change. But it's not really well supported by the scientific literature itself, including by the UN IPCC. This is the kind of thing that we discuss in Climate and Energy, the Case for Realism. And by the way, during the month of April, the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, a nonprofit think tank of which I'm president, will, as our way of saying thank you for a donation of any size, be glad to send a copy of this almost 500-page book to anyone who donates. All they need to do is to go to cornwallalliance.org/donate, make the donation, and make the request, and we'll be glad to send it.
Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, Calvin Beissner again. It is Climate and Energy, the Case for Realism. I'm Nick Reed on Springfield's Talk 104.1.